fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said, fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Oh, there it is. There's the phrase I wait for. That means it's me, Fish and Frank, Robert in a chair across from me, and RJ up there in command and control. Now, it's kind of a weird thing, you know, and I know I'm Fish and Frank, and everybody tells me, well, you'll always be Fish and Frank, but it's kind of like if Donald Duck's not in the cartoon, is Donald Duck still Donald Duck? So right now we don't have a Fish and Franks to be Fish and Frank with. So I can be Frank with you, but I'm not sure I really should be Fish and Frank, but I could be Fish and Frank. I don't know. But anyway, we will let the retrospect astrophysical stuff go for a minute. Just a quick update on what's going on. RJ's hearing this for the first time. I'm going down to sign papers tonight.
Hey!
That means we have 45 days after today to get inspections for them to agree to the price and do all that, you know. So, formal bid day.
Wow.
Yeah, formal bid day. I'm going to be hundreds of thousands in debt.
Yeah, but you know, Frank, you and I are old. They'll never collect. They'll never collect.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not going to live for them to collect on that. But, you know, it's that's where it's at. You know, you guys are hearing it first. Terry, the wife, knows. Robert knew. And now RJ and you all. So,
yeah, keep it among yourselves. Don't spread it around.
Yeah, you know, we're not going to tell anybody. But, yeah, that's what's happening. We're actually going down this afternoon and meeting the guy and turning in the formal offers. So, wow. This has been quick. This is, what, 10 days?
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean,
what will be, will be.
And then they either accept it, reject it, and then we got to get the building inspected and make sure all that goes. But, oh, my gosh, insurance, taxes, you know, lions and tigers and bears, oh my. You know, county permits. Oh goodness. Got to break out of that and gag. Actually fits the mood I'm in right now.
As in grouper?
As in grouper. That was the gag I was speaking of.
Nice. You're going to pull a rabbit out of your... Never mind.
Yeah. So, yeah, there is a building. It's five doors south of Fish and Frank's. Same side of the road. Huge, big parking lot. You know, the only thing anybody's going to have a problem with? It takes no skill to go... You know, pull into this parking lot and find a place to park. There's no skill involved.
Yeah,
you don't have to dodge the big potholes. You don't have to go through the ditch or the big hole to get around it to get up where you have to park. There's no skill in this. My customers are going to be so bored.
Well, it also, the old Fish and Franks, that's how you eliminated certain customers. If they couldn't make it into the parking lot and survive, there was no reason to go in the store.
Yeah, they were never going to make it out on the water in a boat.
That's right. Exactly right.
Good point.
It was, you know, what they call that, natural selection.
Natural selection, yes.
I like that idea.
But
we'll have to make a couple of potholes and a couple of barriers in the new parking lot.
Well, it was one of the customers who actually told that to me. He said, you know, he says, part of the fun to go into Fish and Frank's was trying to get through the parking lot so you could park, you know, because there was all the stuff in the way and all the potholes and the big... For a while there, we had that lake, and I didn't fill it in for a while because during the drought, the birds were all there.
Yeah.
I mean, there'd be 50 birds in the morning always, because that's where when we washed the squid and the shrimp and the filters and all that drained right out there in that hole. And the birds were all lined up around it, so we didn't fill it in because I kind of felt bad for the birds during the drought. It was a continuous water source. Man, there was a lot of critters there, rabbits and everything else drinking out of that hole every morning.
Absolutely. It's like a mineral lick.
Yeah. You know, it had vitamins and minerals with all the bait that was washed into it, you know? Yeah. So they could drink and eat at the same time.
That's pretty good
but
stuff.
It got when I tried to take the RV through there and hung it up, the frame dragged on the ground. I said, "Well, time to fill the hole in."
Yeah,
so
would do it.
Gags open.
Yep.
Now, what is a gag grouper, and why is it different than a red grouper? They make you sick.
Yeah.
No.
No, actually, a gag grouper won't make you gag as much as a red grouper usually will, because gags are less likely to have worms in them.
Yeah, red grouper actually have parasites in them the same way. Everybody says, well, you don't eat the black drum because they have parasites. And red grouper have the exact same parasite in them, yeah, which is non-harmful to humans. You can eat it. You can even eat one raw. It's never going to survive your system. But for some reason or other, certain fish get them.
Yeah.
But gag grouper is not really one of them.
No.
But does it follow the same cycle that it does in a black drum? Because a black drum doesn't have the parasite all the time, does it?
Yeah.
It does have it all the time.
Yeah,
there seem to be a lot less in the winter.
Yeah, I was going to say there's times when they don't have as many.
It's the hot months of the summer. There seems like a lot of the parasites. Wouldn't they grow up and leave the black drum at some point of adulthood?
Honestly, I think that is their adulthood, and that's where they stay at until they get eaten by another animal.
Until they're eaten by a shark or
shark
something
is
else.
What their preferred host critter is that they ultimately in the end want to.
What happens
end
if
up
they
in?
Get eaten by a barracuda?
I don't know. You know what? I'm not sure about that one.
That's the first time I ever thought of that. 35 years, never dawned on me before. But barracuda is a very likely thing to get eaten by.
Absolutely.
Goliath grouper don't get those parasites, and the grouper is very likely to get eaten by a goliath.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. I don't know. I'll have to find out about that one.
Just a random thought.
Yeah, too random for me.
Yeah, I'll have to call Greg on that one.
Yeah,
he's the biologist. I'll ask him. He'll know. Or he'll find somebody who does know.
Here's what I like about I would say in my head, the big difference between a gag grouper and a red grouper. The gag grouper is kind of mottled, spotty looking outside. Different than a black grouper, by the way, but that darker shades. But they don't hang out on the reef. They're not big reef dwellers.
Right.
They hang out by the reef.
Yeah.
So there's still going to be a reef, whether it's a man-made shipwreck or concrete block stuff or a natural upcropping of natural reef. But they seem to be more just on the outside of the reef rather than where the red grouper always wants to be on the reef or in the structure of the reef or something.
Yeah, they definitely like to be right in the mix of it, but gag grouper will move all over the place but seem to be a little bit more at home on the outcroppings of any of that type of structure.
Even just out in the general sand area within, like, 20 feet of the reef.
Sometimes farther than that.
30, 40 feet from the reef.
Probably 30, 40 yards.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because some of your really experienced spear fishermen, when they're looking for gag grouper, what they'll usually do is dive, and they won't dive straight at the reef. They'll actually dive at an angle away from the reef and start doing a slow circle perimeter to come back towards the reef looking for those gag grouper that are hanging out in that washboard sand bottom. And they have an ability to lighten up their color, so when they're up closer to structure, they'll get more darker in color. And when they move out into that sand, they'll actually lighten themselves up a little bit, so they'll actually blend in a little bit better with the washboard bottom.
So they look more like a rock on a sandy bottom, but they'll be more of a light gray to brown, mm-hmm. whereas when they're up on the structure, their colors will get darker in order to more match the rocks and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. I can say from experience, too, having spear fish like that, sometimes you swim right up on them, and you won't know they're there. And all of a sudden, it takes off, and it's just underneath you. It scares the hell out of you. But they're real hard to spot. You would think that out on the reef, they'd be easy prey for sharks and other things, but you can't see them.
Yeah, yeah, with that white sand and the yeah. light above and everything else creating some different ripples and shadows and stuff like that, that weird pockmark or kiss mark modeling that they have is...
Yeah, it's almost like Marilyn Monroe had a kind of a dark-colored lipstick and went around just kissing that fish all over.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty neat the way they'll lighten up.
That's
like
a nice thought. Never mind. Okay.
Okay.
Just had a moment there. All right.
I think the other really cool, you know, like biology part of gag grouper is that in the southwest part of Florida, basically, you know, you have your four primary grouper. One, which is kind of almost unheard of, really, is a black grouper, but they are here. But the red grouper, the gag grouper, the Jewfish, Goliath grouper, and black grouper. Well, the gag grouper and the Goliath grouper, also known as Jewfish, are the only two grouper in our area that actually need the mangrove estuaries to survive as a species. Their babies grow up here.
So it's another one of the fish that grows up in Charlotte Harbor, in the estuary lands, the canals, the creeks, the mangrove shorelines, and then goes out into the deep water of the Gulf, adding to a list of many. But now, if I'm going to fish for gag grouper, I'm going to go and try and anchor up directly on the reef because I want a shot at the snappers, the grunts, the red grouper, all these other fish that are going to be directly trying to be, stay in contact with the reef. But now when I try for the gag grouper, I'm there, and I like using a spinning rod for it because I can really cast it. It's very hard to cast a conventional. I mean, I can do it, but in close quarters, it's kind of a booger. So, you know, even for an experienced person. So what I like doing is taking a spinning rod and, okay, I know the reef is here. You go out to a set of coordinates that you think are going to be good. Now, you want to take it. I like having at least three marker buoys for fishing reefs in the Gulf. And if you don't go out very far, but pick the depth you want to go out and make your line about 10 feet longer than that. And use a couple pounds of lead, and I use a laundry detergent jug, Tide, Arab, doesn't matter, whatever brand of laundry detergent, in liquid form, so you've got a handle to tie your string to. And then use construction twine to go down to about a 2 pound or so, you know, lead weight, 2 to 5 pounds. And you cut the string so it's about 10 feet longer, deeper, longer than the water you want to be as deep. So if you're in, say, 60 feet of water, you want to tie 70 feet of line to it. Now, and then mark on there that it's a 70-foot string, because you might have another one that's a 40-foot string, another one a 60 or an 80, but you have those jugs there, and one is not a good idea. You know, and I'm too cheap. I sell those one marker buoys, they're around $100, $125, but that's a lot of money for me. So I use a laundry detergent jug because bleach jug, milk jugs, water jugs crush when you try and wrap the line on them. They're just not strong enough. But the laundry detergent bottles are really heavy plastic, and they make excellent marker buoys. And they're kind of usually a rectangle shape, so when you wrap it around, it kind of thumps down. It doesn't just overspin and tangle up. It's a really good system. But I always want one because I get to the area, I stop the boat, I turn the wheel all the way left or right, and then I start slowly circling out from that number because most of the numbers you get, when you look at them, they're for the center of the plotted area. So let's say it's a quarter mile by half mile area. They just pick the middle of that, dead center, and give you the numbers. Now, none of the dump sites or where they made the reefs are on that number. They could be anywhere in that whole area. So by circling, you see something come up on there. You got one guy watching the depth finder bottom machine and another person holding the marker jug. And you want to throw that as far out the back of the boat as you can. Because by the time it goes bump, 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 the number goes and it comes up on the screen, you got about 15 feet. So you throw the marker jug out. Now, the reason I want two is because now I'm going to circle back to go over it again with the bottom machine so I can see it again. And that's when I find the really cool one. That's the one I find that really is cool. Because the first one, okay, that was good. I want to fish that. But as I'm coming back around to go look at that first one, that's when I find the really good one. And I have somebody throw on that. Then I can check my first one, come back, check second one. And I'll fish one and then wait, figuring I'm going to fish the other one again later. But, you know, that maybe I'll fish the one for an hour or two, then switch to the other one. But once I'm on the reef, now, that's when I want that spinning rod. And I'm using 40 to 65-pound test braid, usually around 50. That's kind of between the two. And I want to put 2 to 4 ounces of lead on it. I'm using about a 5'8" to 6'6" spinning rod, heavy
jigging rod
with a 6,000 bait runner reel on it. I usually use the bait runners because it's heavy. I know it's going to be heavy. If I want something lighter, I'll do a 5,000, you know, like a Penn 6500 live liner would be my first choice. The second choice might be a 5,000 Clash.
Right. If you were just jig fishing or just dead baiting all the time, that Clash would be great, but that live liner is so much more universal.
Yeah, I like the live liners. They're big, they're heavy, they're bulky, but if I'm just straight out bottom fishing with the bait, I'm not having to lift it and jig it all the time, but if I was going to jig, it would probably be like a 5,000 Clash.
Right.
They got the hand-cut brass gears in them. They're, you know, they're great for that jigging because when the fish hits, it's a lot of banging, you know, and you're lifting it up, dropping it. It can hold up to that abuse. Even a spinfisher is really good for that. But what I want to do is take that and cast that. I got the marker jug on the reef, and I can see the reef on the bottom machine, and I usually turn that off when I'm fishing. I don't want that pinging, ringing noise going on in the water while I'm fishing. So once I get over it and I see it on my bottom machine, I turn that off, and then I'm going to start to fish. Well, we're dropped down. We're right on the reef. We're catching some fish. And then I take that line, and I pitch it way away, as far away from the reef as I can get to one side or the other of the boat. And then I'm slowly working it back across the bottom. And what I'm going to do is when I cast it out, I'm going to throw it as far as I can. And when I see the sinker hit the water, don't close the bail. Because if you close the bail, it's coming back at you like a pendulum. That's why you don't want to use a conventional for that. You don't have enough slack when you cast. With a spinning setup, and you make that cast, you see it hit the water, watch the line. Because it's going down to the bottom. Don't close the bail. Okay, the line stopped moving in the water. Now you can close the bail. That means it fell straight down from where it hit the water. It's on the bottom immediately below that. If you close the bail, it's probably 20, 30 feet closer to you.
At least.
So you want that distance. So I want to cast it out there, leave the bail open, and then I watch the line. When the line stops moving, that means it's no longer being pulled down in the water. Your sinker's on the bottom. So I close the bail, and I'm going to let it there for as long as I can stand it, which is usually a couple of minutes. And then I'm just going to slide it back to me. And I'm going to have the line tight, and I'm going to pull the rod from about 9 o'clock up to about 11 o'clock. Now, that lets the rod tip travel about 3 feet, which is going to bring your bait in 2 to 3 feet closer to you. And then I drop the rod tip back down. And then I'm going to wait again for a couple of minutes, see if I can get a hit. If I don't get a hit, this time I'm going to have the rod down out at 9 o'clock. I'm going to tighten the line, but I'm going to sharply lift from 9 to 12 o'clock. Very quickly, I want to pop it. And that's going to pull that sinker up off the bottom, taking a little sand with it, and then let it slant. Because I'm going to pop it from 9 o'clock up to 12 o'clock and right back to 9 o'clock. I want that sinker to be pulled off the bottom, drag some sand up, and then let it slam that back down into the bottom to let that grouper know something hit there, like a turtle digging in the bottom or a shrimp trying to get down a crab or something. You know what I mean? Get attention to it.
Right.
And if I don't get a hit after a couple of minutes with that, then I'm just going to slide it forward about a foot, and I'll slide 2 or 3 times, and then I make a jump and a bang.
I like that idea. That's pretty good. And I could see that working extremely well. I mean, it's got all the ideas of the intention of grabbing, you know, catching that fish's attention. Plus, you're eliminating some of your other fish, but you never know, because, I mean, mangroves are pretty nosy. And seeing something like that, that's how you might get some of those really big mangroves that come away from that reef to come out there and hit it, too.
So, keep in mind, while all this is going on, a lot of, you know, the other people on the boat, because you should have at least one other person with you, being out in the Gulf 30 miles, you want somebody else to be with you. A, nice conversation. B, it's a lot safer. It's really hard to plug a hole and drive the boat at the same time.
Yeah.
Or get pulled back over if you fall over.
Yeah. And that's one thing, boats, seawalls, there is places in Charlotte County that are some of the most dangerous areas I've ever seen. Because you have these beautiful seawalls, you got the water down there, everything else, and no ladders in sight.
None.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times I go through a canal, and I'll go 2-3 blocks, and there's not one way to get out of the water.
Yeah.
No way at all. Somebody's got to throw you a rope or hand you a ladder down. There are no climb outs. No. It always surprised me that that was allowable. You know, if you have a dock, you should have a little ladder on the side of a dock so you can get out.
You would think.
Because nobody's going to swim up there to use the ladder to get out of the water unless it's an emergency.
Right.
If they're coming to steal stuff, they're coming in a boat. They don't need the darn ladder.
No. Yeah, that's really surprising. I've never really understood that at all.
And, I mean,
and over the years, we've had several customers that have had some serious issues. I mean, one was,
and injuries.
One was hospitalized and probably took him almost a year and a half to completely heal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
tried crawling up on the stuff and all the barnacles and the oysters and everything on the seawall where he was trying to climb up, just tore him all up.
Yeah.
So if you got a dock and walk out to your dock, look down the canal one way, look down the canal the other way, and see if you see a way out if you accidentally fall into water. And if you don't, this isn't rocket science. Ever since I was a little kid, I knew how to hammer a 2x4 into a tree.
Yeah.
And you literally just go out there and you hammer a couple 2x4s in one of the pilings. You know, you got to use exterior grade. You know, you don't want corroding. Can't use house nails. You know, it's got to be a good exterior grade like deck screw or something like that. But it really doesn't take much to take some, you know, 12, 18-inch piece of 2x4 and make a basic, I'm going to be able to get out of this alive ladder?
Yeah.
I don't know how I got started on that.
I don't know, but I want to go back to not closing the bale. Because I've been doing little geometry here on my pad.
Okay.
If you're in 20 feet of water.
Right.
And you cast out 20 feet and close the bale, how far away does it land from you?
I would say about a foot.
Directly underneath you.
Yep.
So think about that. If you're in 20 feet of water and you cast out 30 feet, what do you get? About 22 feet away from you. So
you're really that smart.
Well, I've got a calculator, you know.
No, you don't. You're actually sitting there doing that in your head. You're that smart? And you're friends with me. This I don't get. This is cool. It's nice to have smart friends. So
there's actually calculations out there for weights and everything else as far as how things drop in the water.
Yes.
'Cause actually for like fire rescue when they go to look for somebody who sank from a bridge or a boat or whatever, there's actually a weird mathematical equation for depth of water to current, and it's within like 5 feet of all of it. It's pretty crazy.
I'm hoping I never have to know this.
No.
I'm really hoping I never have to know this.
But in case you want to know.
I hope I never have to utilize it in a real life scenario.
Right. In case you want to know, it's the square root of A squared plus B squared, A being the vertical and B being the horizontal.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, just Robert and I are like, yeah, all right. We work in a bait shop,
whatever
RJ.
Whatever he said, yeah.
You know,
he must be
you
right,
went to school. We work in a bait shop, you know.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, now.
It's cool to know that stuff.
What?
So.
Yeah.
And, you should, and honestly, not even just from a bait perspective, think about the aspect of, like, how much rope you need for your anchor and the scope of line that you let out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so some of that can still come in handy for those scenarios, too.
I think it's, what, 7 times for safe anchoring? If you're in 10 feet of water, you want...
Yeah, that I don't know, but I the angle is really important, and that's going to be based on the depth and the length of your line.
I think you're right. It's something
because
like that.
Can pull an anchor up easily at 90 degrees.
Right.
Try to pull that anchor up at 20 degrees. It ain't going to happen. You
I think if you're in 10 feet of water for the optimum holding at 70 feet.
Right. A lot of this stuff is common sense. I mean, you can see it, you can feel it, you can do it. You know, tossing that weight out 20 feet and closing the bale really hadn't because I never thought of that.
Well,
so I wasn't as smart as you thought I was. I certainly wasn't street smart because well, that's what I would have done. I would have closed the bale. All right, I got it out there 20 feet, closed the bale. It's going down. No, it's not. It's coming back.
It's the reason I said casting the conventional is difficult, much more difficult than throwing a spinning reel, especially with a couple other people on the boat. Now, I can do it, but the problem is there is no extra line. When you're throwing a bait cast reel or a conventional reel, the line's being pulled off as the spool rotates, and when it hits the water, you've got to kind of stop it, otherwise you get a backlash.
Right.
So there is no extra slack to allow it to drop in a straight line. And people say, well, you know, I want a bait caster for throwing bait. It's the worst reel in the world for throwing bait. You want to throw lures such as spoons, topwaters, jerk baits, but you don't want to throw jigs with it. You want to throw jigs with a spinning rod so you get a straight vertical drop, and you're actually where you want to be. But if I'm fishing underneath the mangroves, it's much easier for me to touch my thumb on the spool and stop with no extra slack rather than trying to grab the line and have a lot of extra slack so the bait keeps going.
Mm.
So every rod and reel type has a good use.
That's why there is more than one type of rod and reel.
And that's why people
otherwise there would be the ultimate rod and reel, and you would never need anything else. And what do we need a bait shop for other than to buy the bait?
Right. And people always say, you know, well, there is no perfect rod and reel. There is no perfect lure, but what you want to do is use the right one for the right application. Because quite honestly, in today's world, like with fly fishing tackle, once the fish is hooked up, it's got a good drag. It's a nice rod. It's not that much different than my spinning reel. And baitcaster, spinning, fly, conventional, all have specific things they do better than the other ones. But one is not better. A fly rod is not better than a spinning rod, and a spinning rod is not better than a bait caster. A bait caster is not better than a conventional, unless you bring into application. And for the fly rod, the spinning rod, and the bait caster, it's about presentation, getting the bait out there. For the conventional, it's about power to bring it in, because that's the most powerful. It's direct drive. It's like the winch on a tow truck or a crane. It's coming through a thing and then being put directly on the spool. With a spinning rod, it's a 90-degree turn, you know, and the gearing on your conventional reel gives you a lot of extra power. Like the difference between low 15-speed truck versus an automatic. You just don't have the same power in low gear. So all kinds of different stuff, but each one has its good and bad. Spinning, if I want to get away from the reef. Conventional, you know, your regular, like, Pen Fathoms, the 4-0, a TLD-20, something like this. Those are great for just dropping it down and reeling in, dropping down and reeling in, because it's all about power and the drop.
And the old-timers used to call those boat rods.
Yeah, boat rods.
And that's what they were for. Drop it over the side of the boat, the bait and the weight, and reel them back in when something hits.
And that would be the conventional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
So
I get it.
If I'm going to fish red grouper, I think the conventional is the way I want to go because I'm just dropping it down on the reef. But if I'm going to fish gag grouper, I would rather have the jigging spinning setup where I can easily cast it away, keep all the slack, get a good vertical drop. So where it hits the water is where it hits the bottom.
I'm going to go with you on that one. Absolutely.
I'm glad because I'm way out on a limb over here, guys.
Nope.
I'm blowing in the breeze here. You know, back me up on this.
No, I agree. You know,
okay.
You know, I think, I mean, there's another aspect of gag grouper that makes them such an interesting fish personally. and it's way underutilized. Only in the last couple of years has it become real popular, and that's they can be trolled for. You know, you can go out there and troll around and actually catch them on a regular basis.
You know who's been doing real good for as far as trolling for gag grouper? And we had a bit of them, but Nomad, for some reason or other, those Nomad lures are really making themselves a name. And I don't have any place you can go buy one, boys and girls. But the Nomad lures, although I hope too soon, but for some reason or other, over the Rapala, over the Mirror Lure, over the other brands, the Ozuris and yada da da, I don't know what the difference between the Nomad and for the last month, the guys have been coming in, and one guy started catching gags with them, and now it had become a thing. We were just finally starting to sell them damn things. They've been on the wall for what, a year, year and a half?
Yeah, about that.
And nobody really looked at them, but in the last month, it was, got any Nomad? What are you doing? Trolling for gag grouper.
Trolling for gag grouper, and some of those guys were using them for the kings and the tuna out there, too, in the really deep water.
Yeah, it's really surprising.
I think part of it is one, that lure tracks unbelievably well out of the package.
It's like pulling a Rapala.
Yeah, I mean, there's no tuning it right out of the package, just like the Rapala. And then the other thing is, it's an Australian-based company, so what they're calling a mackerel is not the same mackerel that we associate with, so the color is a completely oddball color. You know, it might mimic their mackerel in their area, but nothing like our mackerel. So it's a couple different oddball colors, I think, are catching some of the people's attention, and we've said it over and over again. Fish get used to seeing some of these lures, and having a new color out there might be the part of the key.
Oh, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm trying to get comfortable because my back and my leg are just killing me. And tomorrow I get to go to Dr. Windsor, getting adjusted tomorrow.
Nice.
And, oh no, it has nothing to do with that. It's the nerves, I damaged my back. And Windsor's pretty good at that, but he's also doing a fundraiser for Fish and Franks tomorrow.
Oh, really?
So I'm going to head up there. I'm going to get my back adjusted, say hi to some people. So if you're in the Port Charlotte area and you're like me, you're walking around in pain most of the time, you know, come on down and see Doc Windsor tomorrow. He's one of my best friends, and Robert, everybody at the store goes to him.
Yeah.
But it's Access Chiropractic. We'll be there. I'll be down there tomorrow to get my, hopefully he'll make me walk a little better. I had one treatment and then all this stuff started, and yeah, so anyway, I'll be there tomorrow. Just forgot about it. I was thinking of everything I have to do in the back of your head. I've been meeting realtors and engineers and, you know, the list goes on and on. It's been unbelievable. But tomorrow,
the man with 400 irons in his fire took a bunch of them out but added 700 more.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And the fundraising and all this. And I've been trying to tell people, let's hold on to fundraising until we actually know if we are going to be able to rebuild the store.
Right.
Because the one thing I never want to do is take advantage of people's good nature. If we're going to open that store, we're going to need every freaking dime I can lay my hands on. But if we're not going to open the store, I'm going to use that money, well, actually to pay you and the other guys a nice severance package. But right now, it looks like we are, but I want to be sure before anything else. So fundraising. We're going out to Bar 17 this weekend. There's a big poker run. Robert and I are going to be there. Vinny, Jeff's going to be there. I forget who all's coming. Mike's going to be there. We're going to have a bunch of the cast and crew out at Bar 17 to end the poker run. We're going to go out there and they don't know it yet, but we're going to be giving a bunch of the money back to the business owners. They're doing a fundraising for us, but you know, they got shut down the same way we did. So we want to make sure we help them stay in business. Absolutely. They're trying to help us, but I think it's the only fair thing to do is to, you know, share that, spread that out.
Sure, absolutely.
So everybody survives.
Pay it forward a little.
Yeah, everybody absolutely needs to survive. You know, we had a tragedy, but they had COVID-19 and were shut down. We had a pickup truck drop them on our roof, and they had a government decree saying, no, you can't open.
Right.
So I'd rather have theirs than ours, but true. Nonetheless, both are devastating.
Yeah.
So we're going to be doing all that. Back into this, if you were going to do it, in order to do this casting thing, I actually like to go back to what would be a Carolina rig or a slip sinker rig. I put my line through about a 2 to 3 ounce sinker. I tie a swivel on. I put about 2-3 feet a leader to a hook, and I cast it out. Now, I don't like doing this as much with the porgy rig, but for this gag grouper thing.
Right.
Which rig would you rather use, Robert? A knocker rig where the weight's right at the hook, or porgy rig, slip sinker?
I'm gonna do a knocker rig / sliding Carolina rig, because I'm a little weird in the aspect of, number one, braid line is kind of a pain in the butt, but that's what I have on a lot of my bigger spinning rigs.
My heavy spinning, I've got all braid.
Well,
my conventionals, I got all mono.
That egg sinker tends to slip and be a little bit of a headache. I'm putting a split shot above it to kind of keep it in place.
So you want a limited travel slip sinker rig.
So what I do is I actually use the braided line, swivel, 3 to 6 feet of leader, egg sinker, then my hook. My egg sinker will slide freely from my swivel all the way down to my hook. But
so when you're putting your egg sinker on the leader, mm-hmm, between the swivel and the hook.
Uh-huh.
All right, and what I do is I put the line through the egg sinker, tie it to the swivel, and then put my leader and my hook, and I put a split shot above that.
Right.
So you're putting your sinker on the leader, I'm putting the sinker on the line.
Right, but here's my problem is that a lot of times that split shot wants to slip on that braided line.
So well, I'm using it as an upstop, not a downstop.
I know.
So I don't have that problem.
I have that problem. So I take the split shot, and I'll actually slide my egg sinker up to my swivel when I'm getting ready to put it out, and I'll put the split shot just below it a couple inches on my leader line, and then that holds my egg sinker in place. And so it does two purposes. One, it holds my egg sinker in place, but when I'm traveling going from one spot to the other, I can take that split shot off, let the sinker slide all the way down to my hook. That way I can wrap my leader around my handle of my reel to put the hook up in a guide, but my egg sinker is able to move and be down at the base of
the foam
part of my rod, so it's not banging and knocking
the It's not
the
banging
whole
on
rod.
The blank, it's banging on the foam handle. Mm-hmm. I would go along with your rig, but what I would do is bring the line down, tie the swivel onto it, and then on my leader, what I need is at least a foot. So I only use about a 3-3.5 foot leader because I want to be able to cast it. I can't cast a 6 foot leader.
Right.
So I'm using, let's say, 3.5 feet. So I'm going to put the swivel on, my egg sinker on the leader, tie the leader to the swivel. Then I'm going to go to about a foot up and put my split shot.
Okay.
Now, that gives me about 2 feet to the hook-ish.
Right.
So I got my hook about 2 feet a leader, a split shot, my egg sinker sliding on the leader, and the swivel at the top of it. Because when I'm pulling along, it's going to be pulling against the split shot. But when the fish pulls and I'm trying to feel a bite, it's got about a foot of play there where I can really feel that looseness to it. And I know I got a bite. It's not just hung on the bottom because it's pulling back. It's not just hanging.
I
need that leader to travel freely through the egg sinker, through the holes. So when I'm sliding it back and a fish goes to grab it, he's not having to lift that sinker up and move the sinker before I know he's there.
Basically, even in leveling it out so you know he's there at the same time as he knows you're there.
That's what I'm looking for, because once I fix that sinker in place, you know, and I don't have any travel room for the, you know, allowing the leader to go through it, the fish actually has to pick the sinker up, move it before I know that fish is there, and then he finds about me before I find out about him.
Gotcha. I like that idea.
Does that make sense, RJ?
It does. It does. I've always, when I fish bottom like that, I've always used a slip sinker, you know, an egg sinker. Swivel, pretty much the way you described. And I like a short leader also because I just cast it better.
And for me now, if I'm straight down bottom fishing with a conventional, I've switched over to the double drop or porgy rigs. We got the sinker all the way on the bottom, and then your line's up on the top because you're vertical dropping. It's going straight down. So when that sinker hits the bottom and I just tighten the slack up, as soon as the fish pulls, he's pulling on the line right away. He doesn't have to move the sinker because it's all the way on the bottom. And your bottom hook would be literally kind of laying down there towards the bottom. Then you got another one hanging above it. So you get a double shot at fish, double different places for them to look at it, but you instantaneously feel any possible bite. And that's why I use the line sliding through the egg sinker rather than fixing it in place, because as soon as you fix it in place, the fish has to move that. So he knows about you way before you know about him. But with those two methods are pretty much what I'm down to now.
Right. No, and I like that. And the nice thing about having a double hook rig when you're fishing vertical like that, you know, because let's say it's just you and one other person, you know, you have a chance to mix up your baits. You can put one hook with the squid, one hook with a sardine, or one hook with a pinfish, another one with a shrimp, depending on your scenario, to try to figure out.
All right, here would be the question before the court. Harry, RJ, bait, first choice bait, gag grouper.
Sardine would probably be my first choice, yeah.
Sardine.
Robert. Some fish.
First choice bait for gag grouper.
Some type of live bait fish.
A live bait fish.
Yeah.
Now, RJ, you frozen or live?
Frozen.
Frozen, yeah, I am too. For me, I'm going to go with the tweener. I agree with the live bait fish, and I agree with the frozen sardine. But I would maybe either use a whole frozen sardine or a whole squid. Not a piece of squid, but where you have the squid with the triangular head on it and then the thing with the eyes and the tentacles. I want all that together. And I put the hook through a couple times so that it looks like the squid is, you know, in its entirety
so
coming down.
It's moving around and everything else looks more natural.
Right. And then if I was going to do a frozen sardine, I'm going to slit the belly a little bit or just break the belly to let some of the smell out, because I can't always find a live bait. So I would have to say, yeah, a live pinfish, a grunt, something like that is going to be a great gag grouper bait, but I don't always get that. So to me, it would either be a whole squid or a whole sardine with the belly tore up a little bit.
Okay.
But now I always start with the big bait when I'm making my cast, and when I'm dropping on a reef, I want my biggest baits out first. That, to me, it's always been a real important factor on doing better than average people do, because once you get the big baits down, that fish sees that, bigger fish sees that bait coming down, he can go up and grab it. Once it's on the bottom for a little while, the smaller fish start pecking the baits apart, and they're faster than the big grouper. So what I do is I put the big bait out first, hoping a bigger fish is going to come along to hit it. And before the feeding frenzy starts with the snappers and the grunts and all these smaller fish, even the smaller gag grouper and all that, the younger, smaller ones are faster, quicker. They're going to go in, they're biting pieces of it off. This whole piranha attack thing. And then, you know, you got to use smaller baits. Drop down to 2-aught, 3-aught hook, piece of squid, a shrimp. And there's your snapper bait, your grunts, all that. But to get that grouper that might possibly hit before they all get in their attack zone or mode is that big bait out first. And then once I start getting the load hits, I switch to smaller baits. Then when that bite drops off, that's when I throw out another couple of big baits, because they've been sitting there waiting for them to get something till the little ones were all done. And then once they backed off, those big ones are probably still there. And if you drop a nice, big, slow-moving bait to the bottom, I don't let it freeline. I kind of control the drop so it's going down very nice and slowly so that big fish can see it coming down. And even if the little ones go up to attack it, he can eat them while he's eating the bait too.
Okay, I like that. You had something, RJ?
Well, I was going to say it's one of the ways to figure out really what's on the reef, too. If there's if you drop a big bait down there and there's no big fish around, you're going to get all the little guys come over and peck away at it, like Frank says. But I do like the idea, though, of putting it down there, letting the little guys chew it up and be done.
And I put smaller baits down. I'm going from a 6-aught, 9-aught hook down to 3-aught, 2-aught, 3-aught, either one. And from a whole squid to a piece of squid, probably about an inch wide, and just stick it on the hook, drop it down there, or a live shrimp or pieces of shrimp or even fish bites. You know, I'm using the smaller baits where they can actually get their mouth over it. With those big pieces, they're ripping them up, but they're not actually getting to the hook. So by using a smaller hook and a small piece of bait, they can get in their mouth, and that's my objective because that's how I'm going to catch them.
Right. The other thing that's going on the reef on the bottom, it's like an apartment building with lots of nosy neighbors. Everybody sees everything that's going on. And when the little guys start feeding frenzy like that and nothing's happening to them, you know, they're not suddenly being pulled to the surface, then the bigger guys come over and figure there's something to eat.
Yeah, I like that too.
Because when you approach a reef underwater, it's like everything sees you, you know, and they all do whatever it is they're going to do when a larger predator is approaching. And so anything you've done that you've tossed to the bottom, everybody has seen it. The big guy's seen it, the little guy's seen it, just a matter of what their mood is at the moment.
So that's why I do it at first, trying to entice a big fish to bite. And then once the little guys, I've caught my snappers, my grunts, I'm going to try for that other big fish because he's been hanging out there. He hadn't been able to get in on it. You know, like, you know, the old joke says, well, we'll walk down, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The little ones all say, we're going to run down there. The old one says, nah, we'll walk down there, you know. But so by putting that big bait out right after my snapper bite slows down, that big fish might have been sitting there waiting, and he's around. Maybe he's picked up a couple little scraps, something else. He ate one of the little fish, but now he's sitting there. Oh, look at this! Okay, one for me. And I found that worked several times.
Yeah, and now you came up with an interesting concept years ago because like a lot of people have a hard time keeping sardines on their hook, and you came up with that idea with the squid and the sardine mix.
Oh, yeah, the you can do two things to keep a sardine on a hook. And sardines are soft, oily, mushy, nasty, smelly, everything a fish loves. But they're hard to keep on a hook. Now, if you lay a squid down and you slice them, you know, in the sideways, not lengthways, but sideways, you end up little O's like a rubber band. Now, you can put that over a sardine and put the hook through it, or you can use a squid like a nose cone to put over the sardine. You put your hook through the squid, through the sardine, out through the squid, and it holds it on the hook. Now, you can do it two fashions. One like a nose cone. You put the squid over it so the sardine's hanging out, almost like a ballyhoo skirt, and cut it to appropriate length, stick your hook through it. Or you can simply use rings that go slide over the sardine, and then you put your hook through that in the sardine, it holds it on the hook really well. By using a ring of squid or as the squid as a hood, that allows you to keep that sardine on the hook. That's why people spend a lot of money for, my store burned down, so did my brain. What's the ones from up north? The other baits, $17.95 a box.
Cigar minnows.
Cigar minnows are great bait, but they're expensive.
Yes.
Awesome bait, expensive. Now, if you go north of us, it's all about cigar minnows. If you go down to the Keys, it's all about ballyhoo. Now, we sell, or did sell, I should say, 5-pound boxes of you know, just scrap ballyhoo and 5-pound box of sardines. They were about the same price. And then you jump up into that, you know, $17 range for the cigar minnows. Because they're much harder to catch.
Yes.
So the ballyhoo and the sardines are about the same price. And I actually think I like the sardines better, but the ballyhoo is probably going to be a good second choice. And the only reason you use the cigar minnows is because they stay on the hook. But if you use my little ring trick with the squid, works good. You save a bunch of money on a bait.
Absolutely. You know, and the other thing you can do is you obviously know you're going fishing out there the next day. What's the matter with brining all of your baits?
I'm lazy. Your back bothering you?
Yes.
See, you're moving around almost as much as I am, RJ. I am in so much pain, it's unbelievable. That's been the other reason it's been hard to decide on opening the store or not. Just my physical condition. You know, I hurt.
Not good.
Well, a quick mention of the weather this weekend since we got you guys listening to us.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the NOAA briefing that we got this morning is that there are going to be rain bands coming in all through the weekend. And some of them will have a lot of gusty winds in them.
Probably not a good weekend to go out.
No,
you're going up to 10-foot seas at the 50-mile range buoy for Sunday because of that storm that's going to be going, supposedly leaving Mexico.
Yeah, and we don't know what that storm's going to do as far as strength. They're predicting tropical storm, but they're saying, you know, be on the lookout that it may be bigger than that. But what you're going to find are these moments of calm that might last 2, 3, 4 hours, and then all of a sudden you're going to get the rain coming in again because it's just bands coming off a tropical storm.
Right.
Not a good weekend to go offshore.
Yeah, it's okay in the harbor. I think you'll be all right most of the time. You can always find a shoreline to get against. But if you, between bands, get out there, Spanish mackerel, blackfin tuna 15 to 25 miles out, got a lot of sharks in the harbor. There's a lot of tarpon around. Big story is drive the access roads on 41. Look for water falling over the spillway dams. When that water starts, the canals are very, very, very low. As soon as they fill up and that water starts over the spillways, within a matter of hours, the snook and the tarpon will be loaded at those dams. Soon as that water starts to flow, it only takes a couple of hours for them to start showing up.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast a stagnant, slow canal spot turns into just an amount of life
at
those spillways.
You got to watch the spillways. They're along the access on 41, and the spillways will always be on the east side of the road, not on the west side. So you're looking eastward. And if there's cars behind you, you know, let them go in front of you, you know, if you're on the access road. Pull up, look at the dam, see if it's flowing. But don't block traffic. Be safe. You don't want to get rear-ended. There's a lot of clowns out there. Don't watch where they're going. Are we about done? Well, I thought I was done, but it looks like I'm signing on a new building today. So, who knows? We'll see. Maybe we are, maybe we won't. But Robert's in the chair across from me. RJ up in command and control. I'm Fishing Frank, at least still for a little while.